Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. During a game, a high school football player suffers a blow to his head. He's not knocked unconscious, but he has a persistent headache and other symptoms of a concussion. He continues to go to practice and pushes himself to participate in a game just a week later. During that game, he's struck in the head again. 2 days later, he collapses on the field. In less than a day, he dies. Although it may sound too incredible to be a true story, it is. Fortunately, deaths from sports concussions rarely occur, and this is a worst-case scenario. But these kinds of injuries are in fact far more serious than most people realize. There are many more examples of former A students struggling to pass high school after experiencing concussions on the soccer or football field. Many student athletes have been forced to abandon both their sport and their career aspirations because they never fully recover from these injuries. These disturbing examples counter the common belief that a concussion is just a bump on the head with no long-term lasting effects. Indeed, recent research reveals that a concussion unleashes a cascade of reactions in the brain that can last for weeks and make it particularly vulnerable to damage from an additional concussion. At a time where it seems the whole world has gone mad over soccer, or football as it's known in other parts of the world, it seemed apropos to look back to a 2002 workshop conducted by the Institute of Medicine to explore whether soccer playing puts youths at risk for lasting brain damage. The IOM brought together experts in head injury, sports medicine, pediatrics, and bioengineering. These experts presented the scientific evidence for long-term consequences of head injury from youth sports, especially soccer, possible approaches to reduce the risks, and policy issues raised by the subject. 8 years later, most of the findings presented in Is Soccer Bad for Children's Heads? Are still relevant.
First of all, it's important to realize that among children playing sports, that head injuries from soccer really rank way up there. That in one study, at least, in a number of high schools across the country, after football, boys and girls soccer was the leading cause of head injuries to athletes playing in school sports.
That's Dr. Fred Rivara, professor of pediatrics and epidemiology and expert in traumatic brain injury in children at the University of Washington School of Public Health.
The most common cause of head injuries in soccer are really when kids go up to head the ball, and it's not really from the heading, but when they hit another child's head. The two go up together to head the ball, and their heads collide, and that's the most common cause of the head injury. The next most common cause would be falling down on the playing field and hitting your head to cause a head injury.
So exactly what type of head injuries are we talking about here? By and large, the main type of head injury from soccer that doctors are concerned with is the concussion. Basically, a concussion is a sudden acute change in brain function. And by definition, if you look at a CT scan of an individual after a concussion, you wouldn't see anything on that scan. This is different from a head injury where, for example, you might see bleeding on the surface of the brain, or a contusion on the brain. That's not to say that it's impossible to detect concussions, but it can be challenging, since some of the common symptoms of a concussion are things like headaches and an inability to concentrate, both of which are things that can also happen in the absence of a concussion. But there are a few tests that have been developed to detect concussions from sport injuries.
There are a number of tools that are being used now to get a better sense of concussion and a better sense of the impact of the concussion on children's functioning. There's something called the Sport Concussion Assessment Tool 2, or SCAT 2, which looks at a variety of symptoms of the concussion and asks about things like memory, a sort of a sideline cognitive assessment. And that's being used now by individuals really on the field as well as in physicians' offices. There's a more sophisticated testing that's being done. It's called the IMPACT test. And this has been developed by the University of Pittsburgh. And it's a computerized test of neurocognitive function. And it's being used now, for example, by the NFL. And many teams, or college teams and even high school teams, are now taking it up. We'll even have preseason testing so you can get a baseline of the child's neurocognitive functioning. And then after an injury, to repeat the testing so you can try to understand when that individual goes back to baseline on their neurocognitive testing.
There's also evidence that a concussion to a young child may have more severe consequences than to an adult. Some animal experiments indicate that in infants, young children, and even during high school, as the brain continues to develop, concussions can interfere with the learning of new behaviors and new information. Given the seriousness of the concern, some have suggested that children should wear helmets to protect their heads during play. But as Dr. Rivara explains, that may not be the solution to the problem.
Helmets have really been very important in many activities for children and adolescents. We've done work on bicycle helmets to show that they can prevent about 88% of brain injuries. Unfortunately, there are really very few studies of helmets in children and adolescents, and the data that are available don't seem to indicate that there's any protective effect of the type of headgear that is now available for soccer players. So I think that right now we should not think of helmets or some sort of headgear as a solution to the problem. There really needs to be a lot more work on developing appropriate headgear and testing of that if that's a route that people want to go. But there's no evidence right now that the type of headgear that children wear for soccer is protective at all against any sort of concussion.
So even helmets aren't likely to prevent a concussion, which means that if we can't prevent them, we at least need to be smart about what we do after they happen. This is tremendously important because of something experts call second impact syndrome. This is a more serious condition precipitated when a child receives a concussion and is sent back onto the field without sufficient recovery time and then gets struck in the head again. When this happens, it can cause uncontrollable brain swelling and severe consequences, including death. In fact, nearly half of all people who have second impact syndrome die. So the issue has become less about prevention to one about making good decisions about when a child should be allowed to return to play.
I think increasingly what we really want to see is that the coach and the parent and the child recognize their concussion, to not have any further play that day, to go to a physician, and then under a physician's guidance have a graduated return to play. And this should occur in a number of stages. So there should be a period of no activity, complete physical rest, and then followed by a period of light active exercise, the more sport-specific exercise, then non-contact training drills, then full contact practice, and then return to play. And at each of those stages that the individual should have at least 24 hours before passing on to the next stage, and if there's any return to symptoms, to then drop down to a prior stage. So it's a graduated return to play under a physician's guidance.
Of course, the point of all this is not to paint such a grim picture that it discourages parents from letting their children play sports. Concussions are injuries that children can recover from, but the brain needs time to heal. It's important to raise awareness that these are not to be brushed off as minor injuries. So while it may be an increasingly common strategy for the professional soccer players in the World Cup to take a dive and simulate an injury in order to receive a penalty kick against the other team, some injuries in soccer are quite real. And just as FIFA officials have stressed the need for referees to be more vigilant of fake injuries, parents, coaches, trainers, and children need to be much more aware of genuine head injuries so the proper assessment can be made before making any reckless decisions. So as summer soccer fields fill with kids out to practice their best Beckham moves, the chances are that it's all in good fun. But safety comes first. To read the IOM's report, Is Soccer Bad for Children's Heads?, visit our website where the full text is available online. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.